Hey everybody, welcome back to Tough Talks, Conversations on Mental Toughness. I am your host, Chris Doris, and every once in a while, we like to switch it up a little bit, and we're doing that this week. We've got another highlight reel for you where we go back into the archives and we select a handful or two handfuls of our amazing badass guests, and we pick out some nuggets of mental toughness gold, and we put them together in a highlight reel here for you. So we've got that for you today. Now, as a reminder, if you're not getting the notifications of the Tough Talks and blog posts, and if you aren't getting your 6 a.m. daily dose, the daily dose, that's my morning email blast where I send out the daily dose mental toughness tips in 30 seconds or less, then we need to address that. Let's go ahead and just resolve that issue, if that's the case, by going to ChristopherDoris.com/lists, L-I-S-T-S. ChristopherDoris.com/lists. Put your name and email and bam, we hook you up with all the goodies. All right, enjoy the reel. And as always, until next time, create miracles. You say that you don't make mistakes at the WD-40 company. How is that even possible?
Yeah, because we have learning moments. So, you know, one of the things that really emotionally distract people is fear, right? It's one of the biggest things that we have is fear. So fear of failure. So why would you want to bake the fear of failure into an organization? So we said, let's take the word failure out. Let's replace that with a learning moment. And here's the definition of a learning moment. A learning moment is a positive or negative outcome of any situation that needs to be openly and freely shared to benefit all people. So if you were to be wandering around our tribe, you would hear all the time, my learning moment on this was, I had a learning moment that was, which means people are not, they don't feel ashamed or afraid to admit that, you know, it didn't quite work out the way it would. Now, why wouldn't we have that? You know, if you're the best hitter in baseball, you're hitting 300 out of 1,000, right?
Right.
So what were the other 700 balls? Were they failures or were they learning moments?
Well, I think that, first of all, for me, in order to be tough, you got to be flexible. You know, you got to be flexible. And let me back up just for a moment, because you said stuff we didn't learn at school. Yeah. But the first place we learn is at home. Mm. Stuff we didn't even learn at home. Like we can think for ourselves, that our feelings are valid, that what we want matters, and that you don't have to share everything. You know, there's some toys you can keep to yourself. You don't have to. Things that we learned at home, like, you know, you're not always dependent on making somebody else happy or doing what they think you should be doing. And I think because we didn't learn that at home, we didn't learn how to be flexible. We didn't learn how to be observant. Because at home, when we observed things, particularly hypocrisies and contradictions, we were silenced. So we go out into the world and we see hypocrisies and contradictions, and we're silent about them, and we don't trust our intuition. To me, mental toughness means that you trust what your heart is telling your mind, and then you, being observant as to what's going on, you then follow what is aligned in your being, as opposed to what other people think you should do, or what is the status quo, or what's in the matrix at the moment. Mental toughness to me means understanding that when you fall down, it's just so that you can have a quick snack in order to get back up. You don't just stay down there by a condo. You fall down, you have a snack, you get up. And the snack is looking at, okay, how did I get down here? How did I get down here? Can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, you can tell as long of a story as you want.
Okay. So I live out in the bush country of Maryland. I have chickens and cows. I'm looking at a barn right now. So Sunday I was in my kitchen, I was cooking, because I follow grandma's rules on Sunday, dinner gotta be done by 3 o'clock. So anyway, I'm in the kitchen.
That's
And
good.
my grandson had gone out with a friend, and I was expecting them back around 5. It's maybe 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I hear boom, boom on my door, like somebody's knocking on the door. So I waited, and nobody came in. So I go to the door. It's the door in right outside my kitchen that leads into my garage. And I open the door, and there before me is a beast. A beast. 3.5 feet, dark brown face, black around the eyes. And I know this is a dog, but where is a dog from in this country? People out here had a little dog. They don't have dogs. They have pets. So they have Chihuahuas and Yorkies. And I've got two Pomeranians. One is Peace. One is Freedom. They're about this big. They each weigh 3.5 pounds. They're outside in the pen in my backyard. They got a pen, a playpen.
Okay.
And I look, and there's this beast. So I slam the door, because at first I thought it was a wolf,
Wow.
which for me would have made more sense where I live. And
Okay.
I'm like, okay, now how did the wolf get in my garage? All right, question. How did the wolf get in my garage? Let me hold that. So anyway, I say, okay, let me go see what this is. So it had walked down the stairs. It was at the garage door. I come up, I'm standing on the three little stairs, and I look at this thing, and I had to be observant. Mental toughness means observe, not react, observe. So I'm looking to assess this thing as quickly as possible. What do I see? It's got a collar on, and it's a leather collar, and it's got studs on it. What does that tell me? This dog belongs to somebody. Number two, I look at it, it's emaciated. Its ribs are showing. It's got a little molting on its skin. That tells me it's hungry. Okay. So my first thought is, my two little snack dogs are out there in that pen. So I've got to secure them quickly, or they're gonna be lunch. Okay. But also that this dog is in a weakened state. This is just from observation. So when a wolf shows up at your door, first thing you do is observe. Okay? What is the wolf doing? All right. So I go back inside, and I grab a bowl and some food, and I take it out there. And as I'm coming out to into the garage, the dog is coming towards me, and I say, go. And it went. I said, oh, okay. Not only is it somebody's, it's well trained. I take the food outside the garage, put it down, and of course the dog is devouring the food. Now my heart opens. So even in the midst of difficulty, challenge, trouble, allow your heart to open. Mental toughness means that your heart can open, and you can be vulnerable without fear. Okay? So I go, and I get, now I go, because I'm a mama, I'm a grandmama, I'm a great grandmama. I go get a can of food. So now I don't open the can. I take the can out there, and I'm trying to put the can in with the dry food. The dog is licking my face, the can, the fork. Oh my God. In the meantime, my two little pets are in the pen having a hysterical fit. Okay. They could have laid on their back and screamed for Jesus. They would have done it because they're looking at this thing they've never seen before. Right. So I'll give the dog the food. Now, here's my plan. While I've got the dog, the beast, distracted, I'm going to go get the two pets and put them under my arm and get in the house, because I don't know. You know what's going to happen. They're dogs. I don't know. So I go, and I get the two screaming meanies out the pen, put them under my coat while the beast is eating, and I go in the house with the dog. And so the dog is there eating, eating, eating. And now okay, I've observed. I've opened my heart. So me and this dog are now in the presence of love. So I go back outside, and I say, sit. It's sat. I said, okay, what do I do? This is somebody's dog, and it's been lost for a long time. I don't want to call animal control, because if nobody claims it, they'll destroy it. So I close the garage. I go back in the house. A few hours later, my son comes by. He says, what is that beast out in He said, I didn't want to take my son out the car because he said, that's, I said, I don't know. It just, he said, Mom, you live in the bush. Why is that beast here with all of these other farms and houses? Why is the beast here, Mom? I said, I guess he came for the love. So he said he's going to drive around and look and see if there's any signs or anything, you know, and so we could find the owner because it belongs to somebody. So he said he went outside, he opened the door, the dog jumped in the car.
Wow.
With his six-year-old son. And now his son is petting the dog and the dog is looking at his son. And so my son now has a German Shepherd.
Oh, no kidding.
But we did take pictures and put them around, you know, to see if anybody responds. But here's the point I want to make in terms of mental toughness. Just the points that I made. What do you do when a wolf, a difficulty, a challenge, an upset shows up at your door? The first thing you do is observe. Observe. Don't react. Get still. Don't be so willing to have to do something. Be something. Be grounded, be present.
It is, and it's not an opinion. In my, you know, there's facts, there's evidence, there's reasoning behind that that I want listeners to understand. I hope this listening community for this particular podcast are those people. And it's okay if there's buyers in enterprise software listening, but I really want to talk to the sellers, the VPs, the CROs, you know, because we want to touch on, if you're going to go into this world, why not get some guidance and some examples and some best practices to be successful in a community that is so acquisitive, it's so innovative. The speed and pace in which this sector moves at is not for everybody.
Yeah, right.
It's what generates so much wealth. It's what generates so much commissions. It's what generates so much mergers and acquisitions. It's why a lot of bad behavior can happen and a lot of amazing things can happen, because we are in the most competitive, fast-paced, innovative industry of all industries on the planet, is enterprise software. And that is the baseline we need to start at to really teach and coach people to be uber successful in this space.
You help the audience understand, first of all, the distinction between mentors and sponsors, and then, like, why is that even in your book? Like, what the importance of having them. And I also loved that you said have three. So anyway, talk, bring it.
Okay, let's talk about the difference. Okay, so fundamentally, the way I see the world, a mentor is someone who talks to you and shares their journey. So they are someone who is, I describe as at least two steps ahead of you on the journey that you want to go on, right?
That's cool. At least two steps ahead of you. Yeah, right on.
Yes. And because of that, right, they are a career accelerator, right? Because they've figured it out before. And so
they can tell
Murray
you.
Murray Folio says everything's figure-outable. Right. They can save you time, right? And they can help you shortcut, help you do things better, and really, really help you. But second-level career accelerator is a sponsor, because sponsors talk about you when you're not in the room.
I circled that. I don't know what page that's on, but I love that. They talk about you when you're not in the room. There's too many.
They advocate.
It's useless to do this because now I can't find anything. But yeah, no, that's cool. I remember I circled to you, about you. Right? Yes. Mentors talk to you about totally unbelievably valuable stuff. And you said second level is sponsors talk about you, like they're one of your chambers of commerce.
And that's why they're second level accelerators. So
that's the
important
difference.
That's the difference, right?
Okay.
So why it's in the book, though, is because typically by human nature, and including me, right? Typically, we mentor and sponsor, and we, you know, we look after and we care about the people that remind us of ourselves when we're young. Okay, got
what?
That?
Did you write that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so ashamed. I must have missed that part. Can you repeat that, please?
What that means that we typically mentor and sponsor, so we go back and help and are concerned with the people that remind us of ourselves when we were younger.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah,
that's right, which is exactly what I'm doing, right? Women in corporate life, right?
Yep.
So what that means, though, as a woman in corporate life, joining a company where all the senior folks are men, right? Or as a person of color, joining a company where all the senior folks are white, right? It means that we are not going to get asked. Oh. And so, you know, you need mentors are useful. That's a written rule, right? That's not an unwritten rule. I knew that.
Right, right, right.
The unwritten part of it for me on my journey was I didn't know how to ask. Oh. And what I say in the book is also, you know, I was in my 20s. I was blonde. I had big boobs. I don't think they knew how to ask either.
Okay. So how do we ask? How do women ask?
So, how does, like, the approach, I think, is to think really carefully about what the journeys are ahead of you in your career, right? So if mentors are two steps ahead of you on a journey, what journey, right? Do you want to be senior in finance? Do you want to work in international? Are you a working mom? You know, do you want to switch careers? Do you want to become an entrepreneur, right? What are those journeys? Again, write it down, right? Get clear. What are the journeys ahead of you? For me, it was getting really senior in marketing, wanting to work abroad, and wanting to do that and travel with my kids and be a mom. So those were my three. And I say three, okay, conceptually three, because, you know, we're busy. So working out, getting clear what those pathways are, and then saying to yourself, okay, who can help me? Right? Who's two steps ahead of me on this journey? And then going to ask them. And the ask is really important, right? Chris, I really admire how you've written so many books and you've built this amazing platform. I'd love your advice on that because I'm looking to build a platform for the Unwritten Rules of Women's Leadership. Could you spare me a few minutes? And can we have a Zoom coffee and talk about that? I'd love your advice, please.
So would you advise someone to, okay, so that's an example of the do this. Would the following be an example of the don't do this? Hi, could you be my mentor?
Yes.
Yes, that would be don't do.
That would be don't do that, would it? I mean, to be honest, unless you already have a deep personal relationship with that person already. Right, and even then, to be honest, would you be my mentor for what? It's kind of weird, right? So mentor for what? Like if I knew you really well, I'm like, hey, Chris, I need some mentorship on, you know, writing books. Can you help me out? And you'd probably say yes. But again, clearer and the cleaner you can make it, the easier it is for them to say yes.
So let's talk for a minute about what do you see as people's greatest fears nowadays? What are they most afraid of and being paralyzed by?
I think, well, I can speak from like a sales professional or sales leader. I think people are scared of not being able to predict and forecast the business. They're fearful of having, you know, tough, difficult conversations to get the information we need to win. But once again, that just goes back to when you said about like being in a challenging environment. If you think, I'm gonna give you two examples. If you think about like we're in bowl season, right? So when Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, and TCU were selected to go to the playoff, what was the main thing that the committee looked at? Strength of schedule. They didn't care about you blowing out teams that weren't good. They were looking at top 10 teams that you beat, top 15 teams that you beat. How did you play against those teams? So they looked at strength of schedule. And another thing that I think about as we navigate this environment, and I really anchor on inspirational leadership. So as a leader, what am I doing to inspire my team to show up every day and sell more software? And one of the things that I do is I constantly preach this to them and to myself. The two things in life you are in total control over are your attitude and your effort. I'm going to repeat that. The two things in life you have total control over are your attitude and your effort. In the good times and the bad times, you control your attitude and you can control your effort. And another thing too, if you have a positive attitude and you're working hard, people may hear your words, but they feel your attitude. That's a quote from John Maxwell.
So, from who?
John Maxwell. And I'll give it to you again. This is another one I found that inspired me this week. People may hear your words, but they feel your attitude. So if you're showing up the right way, you're putting in the work, you're getting your MBA in your client's business in whatever industry that you're focused on, you know your client's business better than they do, you'll be relevant. People want to talk to you. And if you know their business, you can help them solve business problems. And I don't care if we're in a crazy macro environment or we're in good times, if you're solving business problems, you can still be successful in this space that we're in right now.
Yeah. You know, you asked me, I have this, obviously this
yeah.
right. I wore this to our launch also, but, I have a lot of these. So I'd love
yeah.
But you know what it is? It's actually it's a reminder to myself because, you know, every day is not the best damn day of my life all day long, but you're asking me, how are you doing? The question itself I use as a reminder, because I might be in that very moment, I might be doing pretty shitty.
Yeah.
I might be stuck in my own self-pity. I might be wallowing. I might be fretting. I might be like panicking about, I might just be thinking really, really poorly in that moment, demonstrating an extreme absence of mental toughness whatsoever. But your question reminds me to elevate state.
Yep.
So, right. So it's to elevate state. So I couldn't love what you're saying there more. You know, it's funny because somebody this morning on LinkedIn just asked me. They asked me yesterday, you know, how are you? And I said, this is the best damn day of my life. And then they wrote back last night, which I didn't see till this morning, which is, oh, I'm so interested. What happened? And I said, I woke up. Same thing happened this morning. It happened yesterday. I woke up and then I made the decision. But I forget that. Right. Throughout the day.
Yeah, you do have a choice, you know, and it goes back to when I talk to, I go to do branch meetings and things like that, I'll talk about attitude. I think attitude, we all control our attitude, and a positive attitude versus negative. And then we're all going to have bad days. Look, we're going to have losses that are, we're going to have things that are, you know, really, really affect you. But I say to you, I said, attitude is a differentiator. You can hear attitude on the phone. You can see it when you watch people walk around. You can see when you watch people interact. You can see on a football team, an orchestra, a ballet, whatever, the attitude. And I tell people, and this is kind of, I do it in a humorous way, you know, Philly sarcasm within the play. But I said to me, I said, you know, if you're in the, again, normal time, you're in the office and no one ever asks you to go to lunch, is that on them or is that on you, maybe? You know, so sometimes you gotta go back to the self-awareness and the self-pity and nobody asks me, well, maybe you're not fun to be with. I mean, maybe you complain all the time or you whine all the time. Well, we all know people. I mean, right? It's the truth.
That's
you're in the office and you see someone's car not in there. You're like, great, it's going to be a good day. And because he or she's not into that, you know?
What I usually change it to, Chris, is mental integrity. And I use integrity because, well, especially, you know, in the game of golf, for example, if the player has integrity, it takes care of the toughness. And, wow. You know, in my picture of that is when you have integrity, you always rise above. And so when you rise above, you usually come out ahead. And working at ASU all these years, in their athletic department, they have a hierarchy of what's important for athletics. And at the very top is integrity. So I kind of like to go with that one.
I love that. Well, how do you define integrity?
Integrity is playing, is being yourself and playing in accordance with your values and worthy and respectful of who you are.
You know, my world is about, you know, mental toughness. And the reason that I've chosen to dedicate my life to that is because I believe that human suffering is unnecessary. I would be goddamn happy if artificial intelligence made my job needless. Like if I became irrelevant, that'd be perfect. winning. Now it does not need to happen anymore, because I consider that my role exists to address a problem, which is that people are, you know, settling, struggling, or suffering unnecessarily. If AI can take care of that, yay. All right, but then the next question is, all right, survival. Then how would I survive? Let me just ask you that. All right, if coaching, counseling, teaching, mm-hmm. all these roles become obsolete,
mm-hmm.
how do I survive? Or do we not? Will I not need money? Or will it be a long period of time between the obsolescence of all the, my job, and then like not needing money? So what do I do in between then?
So many answers to that one. The first point to be aware of, again, is that this is already happening. That there are AI counseling platforms out there. That there are AI teaching platforms with avatars out there and being created and being improved on and new iterations. The second point is that with this relevance of intelligence, I'm mostly talking about augmenting humanity, not replacing humanity. So picture a Chris Doris, a mental toughness coach, augmented by all the teachings of Thomas J. Leonard, the founder of coaching, Anthony Robbins, one of the biggest motivational speakers in the world, Steve Hardison, another of the best coaches in the world, the Million Dollar Coach.
The Admiral.
Wonderful. And yeah, let's not forget Chandler, because you
could stick, can't forget Chandler. You know the guys.
You could stick 30 or 40 of his books and countless audio transcripts mm-hmm. inside the AI as well. Mm. Take all those people I've just mentioned. Let's add another 1,000 more of your favorites, the best practice guys. And then when someone is asking you something about a particular life situation, let the AI process the best practice from those 1,000 people, find the connections, and allow you to speak it in your own way.
Well, wait, but why would anybody need that from me when they'd have it on their own?
That's also a good question, Chris.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that is a very good question. I mean, there, that kind of platform, that the best practice 1,000 people, you could also put the Dalai Lama in there, could be standalone, and that would be the best way to do it. But where else are you going to have a cigar and a whiskey and sit on the yacht? I don't want to do that with a computer, mate. I want to do that with you.
Amen to that.
Saying a mantra, which you and I talk about, positive self-talk or saying a mantra all the time, you know, and we know that mantra is like a word that means protector of the mind.
That's but awesome. Now, I didn't know that too. Let's hold that thought, because that's a thing. That's like a takeaway.
Yeah.
Thanks for saying that. Because I thank you for saying that, because I'm using mantras all day, every day, right? And I forgot that piece. I forgot that. See, this is why I hang with you. Yes. Yeah. Mantra means the protector of the mind. Is that like Sanskrit?
Yes, it's Sanskrit, and it means protector of the mind, because when your mind is anchored on a positive thought, let's say, then it's going to protect it from running around into negativity.
That's so cool.
And, you know, if you look at neuroscience, and where I'm going with this is that it's amazing how neuroscience is now giving us some hard facts
mm-hmm.
that show us the why. Show us, like, this is why this works. Because when your mind is anchored on a mantra or on a saying or on a positive thought, then you're going to release certain neuromodulators that are going to facilitate you feeling that way. And then even cooler and more amazing is, you know, even current research is showing that when you say positive thoughts, and this is one study, there might be others as well, that your brain actually changes in size, that your hippocampus, which controls memory, And there's also a center that controls like voice recognition, that some monks that have been repeating mantras are showing larger brain areas. Again, they're demonstrating larger brain mass in these important areas.
Just is. If we're interested in creating massive amounts of excellence in our lives at the fastest rate possible, we really do want to practice stopping having a problem with reality. We want to pay very close attention to our judgments and ask ourselves, does this interpretation serve me and others right now? When we have a problem with reality, when we're complaining, when we think something's really bad, We're deactivating all forms of creative genius. Genius. We're paralyzing ourselves. We're immobilizing our ability to create and to grow. Ain't bad, just is. Is one of the first go-to mantras that I use in the milliseconds after I catch myself complaining. It's the ultimate neutralizer mantra. It's like an antacid for emotional heartburn. Imagine this with me for a moment. Imagine that your auto response to the big business deal that just fell through is instead, how fascinating. I didn't see that coming. That's neutral. Visualize that. It's a possibility. And it will get you to creativity much faster. Ain't bad, just is. Is a perfectly effective complaint neutralizer, and it's actually true. Ain't bad, just is. Ain't bad. Just is.